I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Real spoilers powered by ReviewSTL.com.
Warning, the following film discussion will ruin the ending of any movie you haven't seen. Example, Bruce Willis is dead at the end of The Sixth Sense. See how I ruined it for you? Just like that. Here are a few more.
Silent breed is people!
I am the father.
Get it?
Real spoilers. You've been warned.
Broadcasting from the Lush But Not Lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 452, Lego Movie 2, the second part.
I always feel like it has such a long title because it's like, so you've already said the Lego Movie 2, and then they add on that the second part, and it just, I don't know, to me it always like feels like a mouthful to say that.
Yeah,
it
does. Clearly it's trying to be a joke, but I don't get what the joke is. Like
I think the joke is the second part.
Yeah.
Like that's the joke, but it's a matter of getting to the joke that takes forever.
Yeah, I feel like it should be called like Lego 2, the second part or something, but the fact that you have to say the Lego Movie 2, the second
right.
part, it just doesn't work.
Isn't the rule of thumb kind of like three words or less for your movie title? Like can you name more than like three movies that are really good that have more than three words in the title?
Well, there's Avatar 5, the quest for the hidden
Banshee ride. Oh my god.
Banshee
and
ride
like, oh no,
to
they're
the...
all going to be different. They're all standalone pictures. It's like Jesus Christ.
Oh,
somebody said I have Avatar fatigue and they're not even out yet.
It's crazy. Like I mean the fact that it's 10 years away and no one really thought they were that great. Like they were a spectacle, but like they were 10 years ago. Now you have all the movies.
Not they. It was it.
Right. Well, that's the thing. It's like the franchise. It was so long ago. It was revolutionary at the time, but it's been 10 years. We're sick of 3D. So the thing that it revolutionized, we don't even like anymore. Right. And now you're like, let's have four more.
Yeah, Cameron's like, I got to come up with something new. Christ almighty. Right.
I know. He's going to have to invent, see what they really should do since he's such a pioneer in technology. He should have invented like the first interactive VR movie or something.
Yeah, all right. That's fair.
Yeah. He's over there Damn. Like, who'd like to smell an avatar?
Oh, I mean, I will say that Flight of Passage ride at Disney does smell really good.
It does.
Yeah, they spray the thing like they do at Soarin'.
Like, that's 'cause it's new.
No, they spray the Soarin' ride was the one that first was really big over there, that like you're hang gliding through different countries. Now it goes all over the world, and like they spray a smell for every country or every continent, whatever the thing is that they do. And then for Avatar, they have a very similar smell for Pandora, and it's very like rainforest, and it's like...
It's just some poor schlub with a bottle of bleach.
Oh, jeez.
There you go. Enjoy the ride, sir.
I don't think that would smell that good.
No, probably not. Oh, bleach is all right.
All right. That explains a lot.
Depending on what experience you're trying to recreate.
I guess that's true. Yeah, that's fair.
It's a different F word of the Avatar.
It is. Yes, that's right.
So we should probably go around our metaphorical table and introduce ourselves.
This is Joe.
This is Kevin.
And this is Tom. And just a quick reminder for people that didn't listen to the box office report, we are on Skype because we had really ice storm, a really bad ice storm, and so it was too dangerous to drive. So we're
all an ice storm that happened about 2 hours before we had to record.
Yeah, yes. A little inside baseball. I'm glad Joe said something. Apparently, I'm seeing tons of reports to like people have been stuck on the main highway around here for like an hour and 45 minutes, and it's really bad. And so like Tom and I are just waking up. Joe works overnight, and he's like, "Yeah, the highway's really bad. It's like a sheet of ice. I can't make it." And I'm like, "Oh, well, I don't think we can reschedule. I guess, you know."
He's like, "Oh, stop being a pussy."
Yeah, no, I'm like, I don't think we can reschedule. So we came up with, okay, do it on Skype. And then I get two messages from different people telling me how bad it is, asking if I'm going to the podcast. And I look out my window and I'm looking out right now, and still I live like where I have to go down a hill to get out of my neighborhood, and like it is completely iced over. I could just like slide down the whole thing.
There were two bi-state buses that were like, they weren't jackknife, but they were not in a good position on a city street. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going home.
Yeah.
I know I have a responsibility to this podcast, but if the buses are sitting like this, no thank you.
Yeah. So anyway, that's what Skype was made for.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why they made it.
So if we sound different, that is why. But so I guess from there, shameless plugs. Don't forget we're available on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and wherever you get your podcasts. If you want to swing on by iTunes and leave a review for us, it would be greatly appreciated. Goes a long way in letting people know that maybe we're worth listening to. Also, check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/realspoilers. While you're there, join the League of Show Sharers. And, of course, don't forget us on patreon.com/realspoilers, where you for $5 a month, you get all sorts of bonus content. And of course, if you're creating a will, feel free to leave real spoilers in it. A small
great, greatly appreciate it.
Taking the NPR route, you know, if you're a state planning,
that's real, real with two E's, make sure.
Yeah, right. Some poor schlubs will be like, I don't know why I'm getting all this money. I just, you know, I just like the name Real Spoilers with spelt it correctly.
So I guess there, that's all of that. I guess let's dig into Lego Movie 2, shall we?
Yeah, so
where'd we all land on the first Lego movie?
I was all about it.
It was amazing.
Yeah. I think it's just about as good of an animated movie as we've had recently. Lord and Miller. Tom and I have waxed poetically about Lord and Miller and Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, which they, you know, they kicked off that franchise. That's the first time I was introduced to them in like a movie form. And I just think those guys are comedic geniuses. And I loved this first movie, the Lego movie.
Yeah, I think the problem that they captured lightning in a bottle, and they have tried to recreate that lightning over and over and over. And I think this is the first time, well, probably the second time, that they've missed. Because I think Lego Batman was fine.
Oh, I think it was incredible. I loved Lego Batman.
I thought it was... I thought all of the references were fun. And the story was fine, but I feel like it was just like, it was Lego Movie turned up to 11, and Lego Movie was already at 11.
Oh,
so
I'm surprised.
Super intense.
I'm surprised you being a comic book guy. I mean,
oh no, the references were great. Like I thought that, you know, getting super nerdy and super meta on some of those references were totally fine. I just mean like the way it looked. Like there, it was lots of colors, lots of explosions, lots of everything that was a little bit over the top for me.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, critically, the movie was great. It has a 90% on Rotten Tomatoes, average of 7.5 out of 10, so that's pretty solid. I mean, I've heard nothing but people loving that movie, so I'm surprised you picked that one over, like, Lego Ninjago, or...
Well, that,
like...
that was the other one that was a swing and miss.
But anyway, so yeah, I mean, the first one, we can all agree, the Lego movie was great.
Yeah, absolutely. And this one actually picks up right when that first one leaves off.
It's been, what, 3 years, right?
Five years.
Okay.
There's a five-year gap. But the first one, this movie starts when those other other Lego aliens come down one hit. When the main, I guess what you call them, the main character? I guess the main human character?
He is the one who's creating the whole world. So Bricksburg, you've seen the first movie. We find out that the kid, Will Ferrell's son in the movie.
Is that his real son?
It's not. But he, this character, he has created this whole world. He goes down, he plays with his dad's Legos. Everyone's seen the movie, and creates this whole world with all these characters. And so at the end of the movie, they set it up for now his sister's getting into Lego type, you know, building block toys, but it's Duplo, the kid's, you know,
right,
version
which I
of
thought
Lego.
Was good.
Like, it is like good. That. Yeah. So you get all these big, like bulky, like Legos are more detailed and Duplo is like big, you know, circular, big, you know, blocky monsters. And they say like, you know, we're here from Duplo. We're here to destroy you. And so that is kind of like what happens. And over the 5 years, like things have just, they've worlds have combined. And
well, and also they kind of double down on the Bricksburg begins to, it changes with the kids.
Sure.
Right. So like, instead of it being like a, you know, a super fun, happy time, it becomes like a post-apocalyptic town because the kid is like an angsty teenager now. And you've got the girl, the sister who's, you know, way into pop music and everything teeny bop. So her additions to this place reflect her.
And they turn it into Bricksburg becomes Apocalypseburg, and it's Mad Max, right. Basically.
Basically, yes.
Which, I like,
except
like,
for Emmett.
I like the conflict in terms of like, that is the problem when you have two kids of a different developmental stages trying to play together, though, is that like the girl's version of playing is basically undoing everything he creates,
right,
which is maddening for him. And but there's also the irony of like, it's also why the dad didn't want him to touch the stuff in the first place.
Right.
Totally. I like that setup. I really like where they went with that. I like the introduction of not only the male versus female, but the older brother, younger sister dynamic and how that affects Bricksburg.
Right. And so Apocalypseburg, everything is not awesome.
Everything's not awesome.
And I do like we'll get into that song at the end, but
yeah.
I do like that Emmett is exactly the same.
Yeah.
Like he's not, he has not changed at all. And he, like, I also appreciate that they don't really make him and Elizabeth Banks' character like romantic. Like it's kind of there, but they're just friends.
He wants to be.
I don't know that.
Well, I mean, he wants to build the house and have the perfect home for them. I mean, I think he wants to, but I mean, Wildstyle, who is now going by Lucy, she, I mean, you know, she's wants to be off on an adventure and she wants to go off and fight this new forces that's come in. And Emmett's like, hey, I've made us the perfect home with the garden and the flowers. And I like their relationship a lot because you can tell that Lucy cares about Emmett and Emmett certainly cares about Lucy, but they are still so different. Like neither one of them has changed the other. They're really that much.
I do like the brooding scene, like right from the jump, like Wildstyle is looking, she looks like the gal from Resident Evil. Like the same, like she's got this, you know, like the hood and the thing covering her face and the glass and the goggles, and she's explaining like about brooding.
Yeah.
And Emmett's just like, I don't think I can do that. And he's like, you gotta think of something so scary. And he was like, no, I got nothing.
Yeah.
So this is where we get like the plot device where Emmett has a dream where he sees a dolphin. It says it's 5:15 and, you know, the world opens up and Armageddon
is on the way. And sorry, my 2-year-old is screaming at the top of the steps. That's, for me.
It's fitting for a Lego movie. Did she just step on your Legos?
No, but I have stepped on plenty of Legos and Maya Rudolph's reaction. Totally justified. But yeah, so he envisions Armageddon, and it's just, and again, going back to the first one where there's all kinds of play on words for real world stuff compared to Lego world stuff.
It's clever. I mean, there's a lot of stuff in this movie that's clever and it works, but like you said at the beginning, the problem is you know, that first movie is such lightning in a bottle. Like, they've done a lot of clever stuff since, and it's not that this movie isn't good, but I mean, that first one was so good that it's very hard to even meet those impossible expectations. Yeah, I definitely, there's a lot of fun stuff. I, I wanted to love it. I mean, and just like Tom said, you know, I mean, we're both fans of Lord and Miller. I love their stuff, and I love the first one, and really all the Lego stuff. Like, I wanted to love it so bad, but it just couldn't hit that level. Like, I wasn't into this one that much.
Interesting. Yeah, I enjoyed it, but yeah, I didn't fall in love with it in quite the same way. I don't feel like they phoned it in, but
no, not at all.
But it just didn't quite click for me on the same level. I also think there's some expectation differential in that I was dreading seeing the first Lego movie. And I remember I was with another critic. I remember that screening, all the critics were like, this is just the dumbest cash grab idea for a movie we've ever heard of in our lives. Just the idea of, especially because Legos, they, you know, it's not even a toy with a plot. Right.
Sure, like, sure.
It doesn't even have characters, really. And so we were just like, where are you getting a movie out of Legos? And we were just, I mean, you could tell we were all just primed to destroy that movie. And when it was over, we were just, I mean, as giddy as jaded film critics can get over a movie, because it was so well done and so good. And it is a crime that movie wasn't even nominated for Best Animated Picture.
Yeah, yeah.
It should have won, and then it didn't even get nominated. Is just, I mean, you know, is that a cinematic outrage?
That's the Oscars in a nutshell, though, for you.
Right, totally. So again, I thought this one was solid, and if I had never seen the first one, I probably would like this a lot more. But yeah, as much as I loved the first one, I wanted to love it more, and there are certainly things to like, and overall I enjoyed it. I don't feel like it's a complete, you know, it's not a bad movie. It's just, you know, and I feel like, you know, when your teacher would pull you aside and be like, you can do better than this.
Well, and the other thing you got to keep in mind for this one too is it's not directed by Lord and Miller. It's produced by Lord and Miller, and they wrote it. But, you know, I think you do lose.
Is this the Shrek guy?
Shrek 4. But right, it's also the Deuce Bigelow guy, the Sky High guy, the Surviving Christmas guy.
Sky High is good stuff.
You know, but it's just, he is, you know, sometimes you get a Lego Movie 2 directed by Mike Mitchell, and then sometimes you get the Lego Batman movie, you know, where it's like,
Who was that's
Chris McKay, the guy that was in talks for the Nightwing movie, and
I mean, that's still on the table.
Yeah, but I mean,
I've not seen that. Right,
that's okay. True, but it's like, so like, I feel like Chris McKay perfectly captured what was great about Lego Movie translated to Batman. And the other thing is too, you're living in the Batman universe, so you're focusing on one universe. Chris McKay has, you know, Batman tattoos on him. He loves the characters, loves the comics. So like, that was a perfect translation. Whereas I feel like this guy, you know, he may know what he's doing as far as he directed Trolls. So that was a successful animated movie.
Oh, okay.
But you know, I don't know that it translated to him as well as it translated to McKay, or as well as Lord Miller could have done with it. So again, the movie's not bad by any means, but it's just, it lost that something special where he couldn't really pick up and run with it, I don't think, as well as we had hoped for. And so the movie was good, but it never, I think Tom said it best, I never fell in love with the Lego Movie 2. I thought, oh, there's a lot of funny, awesome stuff in it, but at the end of the day, I left and I was like, okay, I don't really, I'm not clamoring to see it again.
No, and I'm in the same boat. I thought it was smart, I thought it was fun, but I'm not clamoring to see it again.
I think it being written by Lord and Miller is where you get the cleverness, the funness. I mean, it's the guys that wrote the first one, so you have their stuff in there, but I just feel like maybe the decision-making, you know, maybe them not being on set every day, not being the directors, you know, I feel like maybe that lost something to whereas, you know, they do a lot of improv, you know, they're really funny guys. The reason they got fired from Solo was because they were improvising too much. Like, yeah, like, I just feel like having Lord and Miller being the directors means they're going to go, hey, no, try this. Hey, do this. Hey, do this.
Yeah.
Where at the end of the day with this, they're on four projects and they're just watching, you know, the clips every couple weeks or whenever they're on set, and they're like, okay, this will do, but they're not in there like, what could they have done with it on set every day?
Yeah, I think that's the real difference, and that's why the fact that they wrote it is why it's still a good movie. Mm-hmm. But the fact that they probably weren't involved on a day-to-day basis is what stops it from being a great movie
like the original Lego movie.
Yeah,
and I don't even see that they have anything in the pipeline.
Well, it's a shame, just real quick to that last point, it's a shame they get fired from Solo. If they weren't working on Solo, I bet they could have directed this.
No, probably.
There's a really great missed opportunity there because, yeah, like they spent all this time working on a movie that never saw the light of day, at least not their version of it.
Yeah.
And this movie, which could have been a phenomenal movie, I think, if they were involved on a daily basis.
Yeah, but they wrote Spider-Man.
They produced it. I didn't think they... It's not just them.
Oh, it's not? I thought they wrote the story.
I'm going to look it up. I don't think that they wrote... I mean, okay. So, Phil Lord does have a screenplay credit on it.
Okay.
Rodney Rotham has a screenplay, and Phil Lord has the story. So, what I'm guessing is that Phil Lord kind of created the story, and then probably the other guy ran with it. I'm not saying he wasn't involved at all, but it's not Lord and Miller. It's Lord coming up with the idea, and then probably Rodney Rotham filling in all the blanks and doing the research and, you know.
That makes sense.
Lord cleaning it up. But yeah, it's a shame, like Tom said. I mean, no one could have predicted that. It's one of those things that, you know, hindsight's 2020, and obviously they're just as disappointed as anyone, but it's a shame it played out that way, because I really would have loved to have seen their version of this, where we might be again swooning over it and going, oh my God, how did they make it better than the first one?
Yeah.
But they didn't. Yeah. So, you know. So we should say that the aliens have shown up, and the Lego people's option was A, to first send the Justice League to go to this alien world and take them out. I do like that they have switched out the old Aquaman with the new Aquaman.
Yeah.
Also voiced by Jason Momoa, which I thought was very funny.
It's pretty funny.
And so we've got our Superman by...
Channing Tatum.
Channing Tatum, Green Lantern by Jonah Hill, and then Wonder Woman is Colby Smulders. And they disappear. Like, they go into what is basically the door upstairs. They disappear, and they're never seen. The stair gate. Yes. Oh, God. So good.
There's a lot of clever stuff. And, just to touch on your point with sending the Justice League away, I think another problem that this script has overall is you send almost everyone from the first movie away. So we loved these characters, and I understand there's a lot of them and there's a lot of voice actors to pay, but they did that thing, which is very clever, where you get them in the first 10 minutes and then they, you know, find a creative way to make everyone, you know, disappear. And
except for your main two characters.
Yeah. And so it kind of, I mean, even Wildstyle is abducted and kind of goes off on her own journey.
Yeah.
And, you know, you bounce back and forth. But as soon as I saw that in the theater, I go, oh, that's what we're doing. Like, you didn't get, you got everyone to come do audio for a day. And so they could be in there. Lord Business shows up and goes, bye. And then he shows up at the end, hi. And then, you know, so you lost that magic where we love all these characters. We love Nick Swardson as the pirate. We love Benny, the spaceman. We love these characters. And they got rid of them for whatever logistics reason that they had.
They probably couldn't bring... I mean, I'm sure Charlie Day was still filming Always Sunny. I know that they were working on a new season probably when this was coming out. Nick Offerman, I don't think, was doing anything, so I have no explanation for that.
But the problem...
Sure, you're right, yes.
The problem you run into is they didn't know the Lego movie was going to be a smash hit, and I bet you they only had one movie deals.
Oh, probably.
Think about how much money it is to sign on even Charlie Day or Nick Offerman for a second movie when the first one made $1 billion or whatever.
That's why Will Ferrell's in it for a cup of coffee.
Yeah, I think that's why it's logistics. I mean, I'm not saying, I mean, maybe they did come up with a story, but I have a feeling they were writing a way around all these characters, and it's a shame because if they could have gotten the whole cast maybe to come back on a hilarious adventure, you know, that would just give it that extra bonus.
But I agree. I think that's exactly what they were doing, is they had to figure out how to write all these people out of it. They kept them in just long enough so
to make a trailer.
To make a trailer and to not make it feel completely like just, you know, you could only
all new characters.
Yeah. Right. But that was certainly another stumbling block, no pun intended. I think you also, like, this is the big difference between them writing it and them being involved, I think, day to day, is that it's a very clever movie at times. There are some very, very clever parts, but I didn't feel like it was as silly or whimsical as the first one. And I think you can write clever, but you almost have to invent silly on the fly. And so You get glimpses of silly, but it's not as consistently placed throughout in the same way that it was in the first one. And I agree. I think it's them not being there day to day to be like, hey, let's try this, or what if this happened, and give us another read, but this time do it this way. And I think that instead they got a director who was definitely like, you know what? I know I'm not Lord Miller, so I'm not messing with the script. Right. We're gonna shoot what's on the page.
Yeah, you know? And that's why people do. That's why a lot of times directors, when they're making comedies, I mean, almost all of them will do, let's film what's on the page, and then let's do a couple of improv takes, and then sometimes the improv stuff makes it in, sometimes it doesn't. But when you have that flexibility and people are improvising, like Tom said, that's when you come up with the silliness. It's stuff that you can't predict. You have to be in the moment, and then everyone busts out laughing, and it's like, yeah, we're using that.
Right, and I think that's we jokingly talk about like the brooding scene with Wild Style and Emmett, but it definitely feels like this is a darker movie.
Yeah, it's dour. Like the stakes are high. Like people are being abducted. The world is ending for them. Like, you're right. I mean, that's another problem is the first one, where everything is awesome and Emmett's relentless positivity shine through even in the face of danger, where it's like with this one, it's kind of a bummer for a lot of it.
It is kind of. And I think to Tom's point, like that's where it loses it. Like the whimsy and the silliness are what make that first one so perfect. And when you take those away and you kind of double down on the quote unquote darker story, you lose what made that first one so great.
Yeah. Cause I think from a plot standpoint, the first one's pretty dark too. I mean,
right. Oh, totally
destroyed, but you get that silliness throughout that makes a dark story not feel as dark. And when you don't get that consistently in this one, it does make it feel darker.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So the Justice League is gone. We're introduced to, I think her name is, she's from Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Stephanie Beatrice, who's General Mayhem.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, so she shows up, and Batman, Will Arnett, again, great as Batman. I didn't know that Ralph Fiennes?
Yeah, Ralph.
Is Alfred.
Oh, yeah. Well, so that was the weird thing. That, did you know in the Lego movie, Ralph Fiennes was Alfred but didn't voice Voldemort?
No, is that right?
And Voldemort's in the movie. Yeah, that's the funny part. And
that's
so
funny.
I interviewed Chris McKay about the Lego Batman movie, and I asked him about that, and I think it had to do with something like the expectation of the fans or something, or no, maybe he felt weird like asking him to redo this iconic role or something, like on top of Alfred. It's been several years now, but it's like they're very well aware of it, and I don't think there was like a contractual problem or anything, but I think it was just something about it being weird or having the same guy be Alfred and him in the same movie, something, you know.
Huh. Well, it's not like he does an Alfred's voice for Voldemort. It's a completely different voice.
Yeah, I mean, you could still tell both of them are Ralph Fiennes, though, if you know Ralph Fiennes. I don't know, but it's funny that that Voldemort shows up and it's not the guy that's also in your movie.
Right, yeah. Right. So yeah, so Batman can't beat General Mayhem. And General Mayhem kidnaps again. Emmett is like, God love him. He keeps trying, but he's just not that good of a good guy.
I mean, this whole opening with all the characters, it's very funny and very clever. And the star who's like crying and he of course lets him in. Wild Style's like, what'd you do? You know, and the star, and then all of a sudden General Mayhem's in there with them. Like, it's funny. Yeah. I like that humor, and that carried over from the first very well.
Yeah. So then they're all kidnapped and, they being all of our main characters. So the pirate, the spaceman, the cat, and Wild Style are all kidnapped by General Mayhem. And she kind of takes them away. But they don't really tell you where they're going other than to the Stairgate. So Emmett takes it upon himself to go after them. And he takes the house that he had built for him and Lucy. Just way easier to say Lucy than Wild Style.
Sure.
Constantly.
And they do it in this movie, so that's fine.
They do, yeah, right. And builds it into a little spaceship and goes after them. And of course, Emmett isn't going to make it. And right before he crashes into an asteroid, here comes.
Oh, isn't it like Rex Danger or something?
Yes, Rex Danger, which I was like, yeah. And I feel like they wanted Kurt Russell.
Well, I mean, no, the whole thing is it's the progression of Chris Pratt's career. I mean, it's perfect.
And he's doing a Kurt Russell impression.
Oh.
I think he's doing John Wayne impersonation.
Oh,
Rex, maybe. Rex Danger Vest.
I had that cadence.
I can see that.
Which I feel like Kurt Russell also has that cadence.
Yeah. Well, but John Wayne had it first.
Yeah,
that's fair.
But
that's totally fair.
But this whole thing, I mean, I do really like the fact that Chris Pratt, the entire movie is Chris Pratt poking at himself and his career, going from, you know, the schlub, the Emmett. Chris Pratt was Emmett, and then he went to Rex Danger Vest. Like, it's very smart, again, the way they wrote this and those characters.
And they even say, like, you know, like, oh, a chiseled chin hiding behind baby
yeah
fat. Like, it's
right. And he, of course, he has a spaceship full of raptors that he trained.
I thought that was great that he trains raptors, and like, especially right from the when they cut to like the montage of the different characters and him training the raptors, and then like that they're his henchmen through the whole movie. Like,
right,
it's so
basically
so random, but it's like in those Jurassic World movies, it's like, oh my god, he talks to raptors and they do all this stuff. It's great.
Right. So we go to I don't remember the name of the planet that that General Mayhem is taking the group to, but now we're introduced to, which I thought was a great scene where we see kind of like a traditional, like a newer version of the Lego people, which is what they are, right? Like that's what
I took them as being like the girls' Legos. Like there's a set,
right.
There's a set of Legos that are, you know, pink boxes. I'm not trying to be sexist. Like they've marketed a whole wall at Walmart, Target or whatever to the girls' quote unquote Legos. And like they are more, they're a little bigger, I think. They're smoother. They're not as tiny and detailed. You know what I mean? It's like, it's just marketing.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the way that they've made these for the girls section. Because they weren't as big and kitty as Duplos, but they weren't your traditional Legos either.
Right. They didn't look like all of the characters that they have like more facial features.
Yeah. They're bigger. Like the features aren't as tiny. It's hard to describe it, but
Lego Friends is what they're called.
Okay. Yeah. It's a different line. There you go. Lego Friends.
There it is. So we see like this horse, and we see this girl sitting on top of the horse, and they just assume that the girl is the queen of this thing, and it turns
out
that's
funny.
It's the horse.
That was funny, like when they got down, and no, it's that's her,
right? And she's voiced by Tiffany Haddish, and it's interesting, like Queen Whatever Wanabe.
Yeah, Queen Whatever.
That's her name.
Yeah, Queen Whatever Wanabe.
I don't remember there being this many songs in the first one.
No, I like that they did this. I like the Disney-esque musical portion of it, like, you know, singing about a plot like this.
But
I didn't like Tiffany Haddish. I thought she was miscast in this role.
Oh, I liked her fine.
I just didn't like it.
I liked her. I like because this character is like set up to be the villain, and then it's not the villain.
Right.
And like Tiffany Haddish has this edge to her voice to where it's like, she can be silly and fun, and I'm like, okay. And then it's like, oh, she's supposed to be the villain. Okay, I buy that too.
Yeah,
and then she ends up not being the villain, and I'm like, okay, yeah, I still buy that. Like, I honestly think that she was perfectly cast.
Wow. Yeah,
I liked her a lot.
And it's not anything against her. I think maybe it's her lack of voice acting experience. Like, I just mean acting wise. Like, to me, I heard Tiffany Haddish. Like, that's all I heard. I didn't hear a nuanced performance. Whereas, like, I think, like, Chris Pratt is very good as Emmett. And so, to me, there was just something lost there where it's like, okay, they got one of the biggest names out there to do a voice, not to act, really. But that's just me, I guess.
So, yeah, so she gives a whole song about how she's not the bad guy. And I do like how Lucy's kind of like, Isn't this exactly what the bad guy would do?
Yeah, clever
song. And
everybody's
like, no, the song's great. Like, it's such a great song. So they think that they are brainwashing all of our characters into just, like, falling in love with this, the sister world, basically. While at the same time, Emmett is riding with Rex, and they have to, you know, Rex kind of decides, he's like, okay, we're going to go get him. You're going to be the hero. I'm going to teach you how to be tough and do all this other stuff. And, of course, Emmett, you know, he, delusions of grandeur, I guess. Like, he just wants to be the thing that he thinks Lucy wants him to be. So he agrees to go with Rex and, you know, learns all these cool moves. And, we end up, where do they go where they find all the heroes?
Oh, Just wherever planet.
That's the first spot.
Whatever,
right?
Planet they wherever the planet is that Justice League went and blasted off to. Like, yeah, they went there. Do they go through the Stairgate to get there?
Yeah, they do. Yeah.
So it's just whatever. I can't remember if there was a clever name for it, but they eventually go to that planet. I just have to mention, wasn't it sad when his house that he built for Lucy was destroyed?
And that, again and again.
I'm just like, but like in the very beginning, he built this perfect house and it gets destroyed. I'm like, it's just funny when they can make you feel kind of emotional about like these Lego characters. I'm like, he cared so much to impress her and build this house
and squished. Yeah,
but then he turns into a rocket ship.
And then, of course, well, and then it gets broken again.
Yeah.
Like Rex just kind of touches it and it falls apart. Mm. So yeah, so they end up in this town. And this is where we find Superman and the Green Lantern and everybody's, and you know, the three different versions of Wonder Woman, which that big one was super creepy.
I'm guessing that's probably in that Lego Friends set or something. It's like a different.
Yeah, I don't know. That one creeped me out. So all of, like, he's
so
not,
they never returned. Right. Like Justice League went to go do what they had to do, and they never returned. And we find out that they're all now like Superman's mowing lawns, and like they've just.
He's like, I'm sparkly now. I'm sparkly, man.
Yeah, they're all sparkly, and they've all adapted to life to where it's just like very odd. And Emmett's like, "What are you guys?"
The S now stands for silly.
Yeah, yeah, silly. Exactly. I'm silly man.
That's right. Yeah. And I think Ike Burkholz was Lex Luthor.
Oh, was he?
I think so. Yeah.
That's funny.
And I do like where, you know, Lex is like, can I get you guys some tea? And Emmett's like, you're going to take tea from your arch nemesis, Lex Luthor?
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, man, we're all friends here. It's no big deal.
Yeah, so something is amiss, obviously.
Right. And then we keep cutting back between the two where Tiffany Haddish's character kind of, she's leading on that she's not the good guy. Because she wants everybody to listen, you know, they take Lucy to be in isolation, but listen to, like, so, like, that's where the weird part is for this movie, is they want you to double down on the fact that Tiffany Haddish's character is the villain, and she's doing a lot of villainous things that don't make sense when the turn happens.
Like what?
Well, I mean, like, so she throws Lucy into, like, an isolation chamber and forces her to listen to the song over and over and over again.
Which is what's brainwashed all the...
But I don't think that that's a villainous move. I think that's an 11-year-old girl move.
Oh.
Yeah.
Right? Like, hey, listen to this song.
Listen to the song that I love on repeat. I think that's what an 11-year-old girl would do, or a 9-year-old girl, however old she's supposed to be. But like, I think that that's like... To the sister, that's not torture. To the brother, it is.
Yeah, that's what we got to remember. These two worlds are the brother versus the sister's worlds colliding. And so you're going to get each of those sides of what the younger sister would do and what the older brother would do.
That's okay. That makes more sense. Because like when you're watching it, and I didn't put that together until you just said that, is like she is torturing them.
Right. It is. No. For the brother, this has all been torture. But
it's not
coming from a place of cruelty on the part of the sister. It's just an age and developmental stage disconnect and, you know, some gender role differences.
Sure.
And the Justice League, remember, the little sister stole the Justice League. The reason why they never came back was she takes the spaceship with the Justice League and runs up Stairgate with it. And so now all the Justice League guys love their sparkly, happy pop music because they are now basically the little sisters. So, like, she has created this world, and the characters love to do these things with her because that's what she does. She listens to pop music and plays with glitter.
That makes way more sense.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I'm with you. So yeah, so now Emmett and
if
Rex,
only you had daughters, Joe.
Trust me, I gotta tell you, neither one of them are into anything like this.
Well, yeah, because you're like, let's watch wrestling. Yeah, and Monster Squad,
was funny. I was sitting upstairs and the youngest kind of hopped in my lap and she was like, "Can we watch hockey?" And I was like, "Yeah, we can." Is that what you want to watch right now? She was like, "Hockey, hockey's good." I was like, all right, let's do it.
Is Leanne ever like, why am I the only girl here?
Sometimes.
Like, what did you do to our daughters?
I turned them into my sons.
Yeah. You know, you won't give me any sons? Well, I will.
Fine. Yeah, I'll do it on my own. So now we've got Rex and Emmett, and they kind of get taken. Like, they're on this planet, and Rex forces Emmett to dig down deep and find the one thing that scares him the most. And it was losing all of his friends and not being tough enough. And he develops the power of the fist so he can, like, you know, channel that anger and that hurt and smash open, like, holes in Legos.
Mm.
And I don't know how they didn't make a dirty joke about Master Breaker.
I don't know how they didn't either. I mean, that was, it was primed and ready to go.
Well, because a Warner Brothers said, remember, this is a kid's movie.
They could have still made that joke. Like,
yeah. They could, it could have been, you know,
yeah,
Master Breaker. Will I go blind?
And I do like the line where Emmett's met. So Rex is holding back, like, all of the Legos who are trying to body snatch, basically, Emmett and Rex. And I do like where Emmett, he smashes a hole in this little plane. He's like, why is there space under the street? And everyone's like, I don't know, man. Nothing makes sense around here. And they just keep moving forward, which I enjoy that they don't try to explain anything.
We should also
just expect you to deal with it.
We should also probably mention that from the beginning, from the song, that Queen whatever a Nabi or whatever is has chosen a husband for a ceremonial for to be married to, and it's Batman.
Right. Well, it's not. She wants Batman, but Batman's like, no.
That's her plan.
I don't do that.
The scene where she reversed psychologies.
Oh, it was good stuff.
And of wanting to marry her was pretty great.
Yeah. So she. Yeah. So they're having this. You know, Batman now is out of the black suit, the 89 suit, which I always think is funny that that's the suit that they go with.
Yeah.
Is the 89 suit. Because, I mean, it is kind of the best.
But now he's in a white sparkly suit.
With like a frilly, you know, a fur cape.
Fur owl.
Yeah.
And they're at dinner, and he kind of says, he's like, I'm not married. Like, I don't get down with marriage. And she breaks into this song about how she doesn't want to marry him. She'd much rather marry Superman. And Batman loses his mind.
It's great.
He can't handle the fact that somebody would want the Kryptonian over him.
Right.
And then he finally breaks down and says, you know, says, will you marry me? And again, like, the way it's kind of played is she's like, tricked you. Now you have to do it. I got what I wanted.
Oh, yeah.
So Rex and Emmett show up, and they rescue Lucy, or do they kind of, like, bump into each other? Somehow they get all three of them get together, and I like the scene where Lucy's like, did you draw stubble on your face?
Yeah.
And he's like, no. And he wipes it off, and of course he doesn't wipe it off completely. So the plan is they figured out that General Mayhem is controlling everything with this entertainment device, which is basically just an iPhone. Like, that's pretty much all it is.
An old iPhone, right?
Is it an iPhone or an iPod?
Probably an iPod.
Oh, it probably was an iPod. That's true.
But it was like an old, like an iTouch.
Yes.
Because it was like the old technology that the family doesn't care about anymore, so the little kid can play with it, you know?
Yep.
So Lucy's plan is to go take out the general and take out the music box. And then Emmett was going to go to the top of this tower and use the power of the fist and smash the tower, and everything will be fine. At the same time, we're introduced to Maya Rudolph.
Yeah, we never saw her in the first movie.
We did not. It was always Will Ferrell. And Maya Rudolph, we find out, is our Mommageddon. Because the two kids don't get along.
And so wasn't the first thing, like, she stepped on the Legos and got mad and then...
No, that was the last time. That was when, to the box of storage.
Okay, so she just sees them fighting about Legos and tells them to, don't, you better play nice or you're not going to play at all.
Right. And that's, so that they're giving you this, the backstory that we got from the first one, again, kind of just, you know, a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
Because they couldn't get Will Ferrell.
Yeah.
And I didn't notice at the end where he's like, have you seen my pants?
Yeah.
And
that's funny.
Bella goes, like the show. And I was like, God, yeah. I don't even remember that, but yep.
Oh yeah. That was, I mean, that was a great callback when he goes, honey, where are my pants?
Have you seen my pants?
It's like, that's why the kid in the first one created that show. Cause the dad's always saying, where are my pants?
Yes. Exactly.
Like that's why that first one, I mean, I know this is retroactively changing things to explain it, but it's like, again, if you go back and you start to wonder, which this confirms, but you're wondering why the kid created this world, it's all based on his house and his parents and the stuff his dad does. And it's so smart the way that they've created this fantasy world that reflects the kid's home life.
Right. And you know, again, this kid, it's the same kid from the first movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know about the girl, because we never saw the girl, did we?
The girl was in The Florida Project with Willem Dafoe.
Oh, some, really?
A24 indie movie about the people
who live
was she the main outside girl? Of Disney World. Yeah.
Oh. Well, I mean, so good for her.
That's where you probably saw her from. Like, okay. She was great in that movie. But if you haven't seen The Florida Project, again, like, A24 is on fire the last few years just putting out these great movies. But, yeah, it's about the people that live in the motels, the very poor people that live in these motels outside of the Magic Kingdom. And you see what life is like. Like, you've got all these people spending their tens of thousands of dollars, whatever, on these elaborate trips. And then just right down the road, this is what life is like for these residents. And the kids run wild and get into trouble. And it's really good movie, but I mean, that's the only other thing I think that was kind of her breakout.
I was like, what was that movie, Tom, that you talked about with is it Kevin Dillon with the kids that are just roaming around?
Oh no, that was Matt Dillon.
It was Matt Dillon.
Matt Dillon's first movie role. But that's
what was the name of that movie?
Over the Edge.
Over the Edge, thank you. Yeah. Where they're just ragamuffins.
And Brooklyn Prince is the girl's name. So she was she was the main little girl in Florida Project, and she was really good. And so yeah, it's just kind of interesting because I went to IMDb real quick to see. I don't see her as being in the first one. So maybe
I don't think we ever saw the sister.
Or
okay,
we just
so maybe
heard the voice. It was just the punchline at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now your sister can play.
Right, right.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, so they went and got her because she was obviously great in that other movie. And so, you know, she'll probably be someone we'll see around for a long time.
I would assume so, yes. So the wedding is going off without a hitch. But then General Mayhem explains, she's like, look, we don't want to hurt you. Like, you started this. And this is when they get kind of a retcon of the entire movie. So in the very beginning when the Duplo blocks came down, Emmett tried to talk to them and he made them a heart out of Legos. And then, but like, they attacked first. Like, that was the part I didn't get, right? So he gives them the heart. The Duplos suck the heart up. And then, like, it shoots out the top of them. And then the other Legos attack.
Yeah, I mean, I think I took that as the kids just being brother and sister and fighting with each other. Like, I do feel like they were contentious at
that
point. But
then they go to a scene where he's actually handing her the heart, and it's like this supposed to be this heartfelt moment of them coming together.
So that was supposed to be the exact same scene that was reflected in the first one?
I mean,
I'm not saying you're wrong. I didn't make that connection. Is that being the same time? Because if it is, it doesn't really make sense, because I always took it as, you know, it's the little sister. Like, now the mom or dad is like, you know, let your little sister come play. And of course, she's going to come and destroy and attack everything, because that's how she's playing in your world that you've elaborately created. So, yeah, I don't know.
I just like it's very some of the messages they're trying to convey, I don't think are working.
It might have been retconned a little bit.
Could have been, yeah. So Emmett, of course, trying to be super. We get the idea, you know, finally, why Lucy understands what's happening is that, like, look, your world and my world need to come together. Otherwise, we are screwed and this isn't going to work. And of course, that's reflecting in the real world where the brother and sister need to start playing together. Otherwise, Maya Rudolph's going to throw everything in the storage, which I did enjoy as well.
Totally.
And of course, in the Lego world, Emmett becomes the tough guy, gets to the top of the thing and smashes. I guess we should say that the entire time Rex has kind of implied that maybe Lucy is brainwashed. Lucy kind of comes down and tries to explain to Emmett. She's like, look, man, you don't want to do this. Emmett thinks that she's been brainwashed.
Because, I mean, Rex, we're going to find out, has an ulterior motive. So he is trying to do everything he can to break up the brother and sister,
right.
Whereas Lucy understands, like you said, that the mom has given them one last shot to play nice together. So they both have these different motives that are about to be on Rex's motivation is about to be.
I do like where she goes, wait, if you're not the bad guy and the queen's not the bad guy, who's the bad guy? And of course, we flash to Rex, and it's just like, aw, nuts.
Yeah.
So Rex gives his backstory, which is just time travel insanity.
It's really funny, the fact that they introduce time travel.
Right, right.
Great.
So we find out that originally, Emmett did not get saved when he was going to smash into that meteorite. He smashes into it. And he falls under the washer.
The clothes washer. And he's there. What's that?
The dryer.
The dryer, right.
And so did he get lost and the kid just got another Emmett?
Yes.
So it's like, that's really funny that it's like Emmett, the whole thing with the first one, the big question mark was like, so you've got all these characters, but like the main character is a construction worker. Like he's just an average guy. And so like while playing, the kid loses an Emmett and it's just a construction worker. Like they got another Emmett.
Right.
And you know, it's not a big deal.
The other Emmett became Rex.
Radical Emmett Extreme.
Ah, there you go.
That's pretty good.
Well, they said that in the movie. Like I didn't.
No, they did.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I thought at first when his name was Rex that it was going to be, and maybe this is what they were wanting us to think, since he was a master breaker, I thought it was WRECKS. Rex.
Yeah.
Rex.
Ah. Look at you with the, you know, the, what are the anagrams? No, that's not right. Whatever that is.
Yeah.
So we find out that Rex is the bad guy. He's planning this whole, you know, he set Emmett up basically. And then we find out that Emmett, because he smashed that, we go back to the real world and it's the brother smashing his sisters, which I was also like, you're kind of a dick. Like, why are you, she's not hurting anybody. Why are you smashing her stuff?
Brothers and sisters.
I got kids now that don't listen to their parents. Yeah. Properly. And then, so Maya Rudolph walks in, and of course, Maya Rudolph is just so naturally funny.
Yeah.
That she can turn anything into gold.
She makes everything better.
She does. She really does. Every time you see her on screen, it doesn't really matter what she's in. I keep thinking back. I think thinking back to Away We Go.
Oh yeah,
and how amazing that movie is, and how
I love that movie. And I felt so bad that movie kind of got written off as like, oh, hipster BS. And
yeah,
and it definitely had that veneer. But God, I love that movie.
It's such a it's such a great movie. I think it got swallowed up by 500 Days of Summer. Honestly,
it was like right in between. Like it kind of had like some of the same graphic elements as Juno. And then 500 Days of Summer came out, and it just kind of got swallowed up.
Yeah, it's.
But you're right too, though. I mean, 500 Days of Summer was the same year, and it was like those were the kind of the competing romantic movies. And,
yeah, correct. But man, yeah. I gotta tell you, if you haven't seen Away We Go, do yourself a favor, because it's not where like 500 Days of Summer is kind of a nut punch at the end.
Yeah,
like. Away We Go is the happier version,
you know, and Kristen, I think that's
because it's like, first off, it's like 500 Days of Summer. It's like they tell you exactly what's going to happen.
They do. Mm-hmm. That's
from
true.
The opening scene, like the first line of the movie tells you exactly what's going to happen. Right. And also it's like it does have a happy ending, though. Ultimately,
I guess that's fair.
You know,
yeah.
Things don't always go the way you think they will.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, and I will say that I think that's part of the problem. I think a lot of times people have in society in general is that just because a relationship ended doesn't mean that it's a failure or it should have never happened.
Like, right. Yeah, you grow from each relationship,
and it worked for a time, and then it mm-hmm. didn't work, and then they moved on. Not everything has to be hatred and
perfect. Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. I guess I feel like it's not the traditional ending. How about that?
Yeah,
which is still good.
As much as I make jokes about how awful my ex-wife is, but I will also say she's the only woman I've ever had a relationship with that I still don't have some sort of friendship or positive interaction with.
Well,
yeah.
With, you know, all right. You're tied to her.
Well, yeah, I mean, I have to interact with her, but it's minimal and it's begrudging. And, you know, any other woman I've dated throughout my life, I'm still like friends with them on Facebook. We get along fine. Like it's no harm, no foul. Like it's, you know.
But you know, that's I love both those movies, but you're right though, like you get so many of these typical, just generic rom-coms, especially to where, like, you know how it's going to end, right? I mean, the rom-com formula is guy and girl meet. It's great for a little while. Then one stupid thing breaks them apart. Right. And then at the end, of course,
something
they get back together.
Something as simple as, like, hey, let's have a conversation. Would fix everything.
And happily ever after, they, of course, get back together at the end. It's refreshing to see some of these more realistic relationships and, like, the stuff you guys explained, like, when they end like that, and it makes you think, you're like, oh yeah, you know, and I've had relationships like that, and it's just refreshing. And so check both those movies out if you haven't seen them.
And it's weird when you look at 500 Days of Summer,
10 years,
and that guy went, well, it's not even that, like, that guy went on to direct 2 Spider-Man movies.
One of the main guys behind Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, which is something else great if you haven't watched. He was really involved in that.
Oh, well, at least he, you know, somewhat landed on his feet.
I always felt bad for him with his amazing Spider-Man movies. Like, I don't know. There's a lot of things I like about those, and I think he kind of got screwed over. And
there's a lot of studio interference in those movies, I think.
Right. It's not his fault, because I think he's good, and again, a lot of good stuff in those movies. So it's a shame how that fell apart.
Yeah. Speaking of falling apart, so Maya Rudolph kind of comes into the real world and says, that's it, we're done. Like, put everything in the box, we're finished.
She warned him.
She did warn him. So we've got, you know, the brother kind of says a garbage thing to his sister, and it's just like, I guess my sister and I have a different relationship. We kind of realized probably when I was, I don't know, 16, and she would have been 13, that we were the only ones that the other one had. So it's just like, we better get along, or we got a lifetime of being snarky to each other. And we don't really want to do that anymore. So, like, I get the animosity towards each other.
Yeah, you know? They're not clearly. I mean, they're a little younger, and they obviously haven't figured that out yet. And I think this is the typical brother sister with
probably,
a few years between them.
Yeah. So they're putting everything away, and the Legos are. They break into another version of this. Everything is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And I do. Chris Frank mentioned that he liked the Radiohead reference, and I also really liked that reference as well. So yeah. So then they realize that as the older brother is putting the things away, how much, I guess, they meant to them as a unit, like a brother and sister unit. Mm-hmm. And he starts to pull them back out and put everything together again. But at the same time, we've got Emmett and Rex. How did Emmett end up under the...
Rex puts him there.
Does he throw him under there?
Yeah.
Okay. So good Emmett is stuck under the dryer, and just when you think he's given up all hope, here comes Lucy to rescue him, and then evil Rex shows up and realizes that since Lucy came to get him, this version of Rex will no longer exist.
Right.
And I do like that they were like, he's like, oh man, you just back to the future did.
Yeah, it's great.
And they were just like, what's that?
I'm a sucker for time travel type stuff. And like, I love that they introduced this element, and the logic of that is always funny that, well, if you did this, then you can't go back and do this, because you would have never went back in the first place. And
Right. And so Rex kind of says, he's like, look, you don't have to be me. Like, you're going to be something different. Which is a good little message, like, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So we go back, and everybody's playing together, and the worlds are together.
Maya Rudolph looks out the window and sees them playing.
And we find out that Tiffany Haddish's true form is the heart. The heart that Emmett gave to the Duplos in the very beginning, that was the true form of Tiffany Haddish the entire time. And I do like that when they're in the storage container, it just says the end.
Yeah.
And like, it was silent in my theater. And I was like, well, like, this can't be the end.
Well, yeah.
I don't know, you
should have it by, you know, and I was at an early screening, and people were all pumped up or whatever. But when it said the end, that fake out, people like in the theater were like, no, you got to be kidding me, you know. And then it comes back, and they're like, oh, okay. Like, audible.
It is interesting how many shots they take at Warner Brothers about like the dourness and the brooding and the darker versions of these characters.
Yeah, that's true.
They do it. They do it almost the entire movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, so they come back, and I like the new version of this is Everything is Awesome. Like, I thought it was a good little tune. Yeah. And then that's kind of how it wraps up, is them all playing together and everybody's getting along. There wasn't really... Was there a cliffhanger as to something that was coming up next? No?
No, I think it was funny. The reveal, I guess, that Wild Style was...
Oh, that's what it
had
was.
Had created the song. She was a DJ.
Yeah, she created... We should say that, like, during the quote-unquote rehabilitation scene... Like, they wash her hair and all of the black comes out, and she
has hilarious
that multicolored hair.
Yeah, she dyed her hair black to be like dark and brooding, but really she has the colorful hair.
Like, did I take a permanent marker and color every single strand of my hair? No, I didn't. But yeah, we find out that she was the DJ that created Everything Is Awesome.
Yeah.
Originally. But yeah, I think, you know.
And then the best end credits of probably any movie. I love the Lone. I thought it was really clever, really creative the way that they formed it. And then I love Lonely Island, and so of course they are the ones on the original Everything Is Awesome,
right?
And so they do the end credit song, and if you listen to the lyrics about like it going on and on, and they're like, oh boy, there's another guy, and they like mention people's names in the credits. It's really funny.
It was very funny.
It was funny, just, but it was like, oh my word, it just was not gonna end.
No, but they even mention that. They're like,
they do.
They say, yeah, it's like very self-referential. And there's a lot of people that go into a movie like this. So, and it looks, I'm guessing it's all CG, but it looked very practical the way they were like rotating different sets.
Like,
and
I felt like the Legos in this movie looked more like physical Legos.
I agree.
Than in the first one.
I agree.
They've come a long way. They've perfected that technology. Like, it's unbelievable to me that some of these scenes are not stop motion. Like, the fact that they have gotten the computer so good and they generate random scratches on the Legos and stuff, yeah. So they look worn.
Right.
Like, the animation is masterful because they know they're making these hundred millions of dollars earning movies, you know, and like they've perfected it.
There was also, we should probably say, there was a nice running gag with Bruce Willis.
Oh, I couldn't believe that.
I forgot.
Yeah, that was
yes. Where so there's multiple scenes. We see, obviously, you know, in these movies they throw a bunch of characters at you in Lego form, and there's one scene where she's like, "What do you want to do? Take my hair out?" Like, Wild Side again is like, you know, if I take my hair off, does that make anything better? I look like Bruce Willis. And then the camera swings over and you see Bruce Willis standing there in the Die Hard 1 gear.
Yeah.
Where he's just like, "Hey, I'm right here."
Yeah.
And then there's multiple scenes of like, I think it was Lucy's crawling through an air duct.
Yeah.
And we come across, she's like, "Oh, Bruce Willis." He's like, "Yeah, I don't hang out in here or anything. Like, it's not like I don't live in here." And I was like, well done.
That was good. That was surprising. I did not expect to see
voiced
that at
by
all.
Bruce Willis. Like, it's not, he also does the voice.
One missed opportunity there though is like, I know that like, Yippee-ki-yay jokes are kind of the go-to with Bruce Willis, but come right. on, no Yippee-ki-yay Master Breaker. Like, that would have been perfect.
That would have been good. How do you put...
Lord and Miller would have caught that on set.
That's probably true. How do you put John McClane in the movie and don't do that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think, I mean, it's definitely a different movie. I think Tom hit it right on the head, is it doesn't have the whimsy or the silliness of the first one. And I think that was the misfire. I enjoyed it overall, but I think not having Lord and Miller on set doing voices, maybe doing some rewrites on the script day of, kind of hurt this in the long run.
Yeah, it was fun. I mean, I thought it was very clever. I laughed out loud at a lot of the stuff. Like, there's a lot of clever stuff in there, but it was the magic. It was that thing that, you know, that je ne sais quoi the first one had, where you fell in love with it. And a lot of that was, I mean, not just the stuff we've mentioned over and over again, but again, how do you live up to expectations like that? A sequel to a movie that's so good. I mean,
right.
It's tough. I mean, they're destined to make a movie that's not. And if we could have walked away and said that was even better than the first, it would be mind blowing because, I mean, that would not be an easy thing to do.
No, well, I agree.
Also, it would not. Say though, they've done that before, right? Like, everybody went into 22 Jump Street thinking, how
That's
do you
true.
21 Jump Street? Cause, and it's kind of a similar thing, right? Like 21 Jump Street, you were like, this has no reason.
To, yeah.
Like, why are we even doing this? And then you walk out and you're like, oh my God, it's amazing.
That's why we did this.
Yeah, and then you'd see 22 Jump Street, and you're just like, okay, you got lucky once, and I hate to reduce their talent to luck, but, you know, like, you kind of, like, really stuck the landing on a property that didn't deserve it once. Are right. we really going to go back to that well? And then it was just as good, if not better, and I do think that
unbelievable. That's
unbelievable. Of them.
Do you think that has to do with Jonah Hill and... what's his name?
I mean, yeah. I mean, if those guys weren't great in those movies, then those right. movies would be great. I mean, but
Lord and Miller for the story and the fact that they could make a sequel like that had no business being made. Like,
was Holly Robinson Pete in one of those, or was it just Johnny Depp and DeLuise's kid?
I honestly have no clue. I don't think I ever watched.
Johnny Depp shows up in
he's in
Dressed
two.
Up, right? Yeah, that was pretty.
Well,
funny.
No, they're both undercover. It's Dom. Yeah. So that it was Holly Robinson Pete, Dom DeLuise's kid, Johnny Depp, Richard Greco, and I think Richard Greco's in one of them. I think he might be in the first one.
But yeah, like
he's the one that they could get the first time.
Yes.
Anybody can get Johnny Depp for something.
Now, yeah. Right.
But yeah, they're like undercover at the very end, and he was like, "Oh, you guys are." He's like, "We were in the Jump Street unit," and he was yeah. like, "Oh, that's so crazy." And then they think,
and they're in a shootout, right?
Yeah,
it's great. Yeah. So that first movie, 21 Jump Street, had an 84% on Rotten Tomatoes in 2012, brought in $134 million. 22 Jump Street comes out in 2014, 2 years later, 84%, exact same rating, and it made $154 million domestic. So like
those
that,
both are great.
But it's just mind-blowing. I mean, I totally agree. I love 22 Jump Street, and it's amazing because when they said that was coming out, I think like most people, I was like, no, there's just no, you can't do that again.
And so. They tried to do it again with Men in Black.
Yeah, I
like,
mean,
that
yeah,
was the talk for the while, is that it was going to be 23 Jump Street mixed with Men in Black.
And I was so on board for that because I'm like, if anybody can pull it off,
yep.
it's those two.
I was in the same boat.
After all the stuff Lord Miller's done and the success of these, if they say they're going to make that, I don't even – that's just like Marvel at this point. Remember for a few Marvel movies, Joe, you're like, I don't know.
Yeah, no way. That's going to suck. That's going to be terrible.
But it's like after a while you start going, oh, okay.
Yeah, sure. Make $1 billion, whatever.
Yeah.
Throw whatever character you want on the screen and it'll make $1 billion. So, yeah, there you go. Lego Movie 2, the second part.
Yeah,
the second part. Yes. Yeah. So, awesome. Well, I guess that's it for this one. Let's go around the table, and everyone can say where to find them.
This is Joe. You can follow me on the Twitter at JoeyButts, BUTTS21.
This is Kevin. Follow me on Twitter at KevinRBracket.
And this is Tom. You can follow me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at Facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. You can find the show online on Twitter at Real Spoilers or on Facebook at Facebook.com/Real Spoilers. While you're there, join the League of Show Sharers and don't forget our Patreon account at Patreon.com/Real Spoilers. Coming up next week, I don't know, maybe a twofer will knock out Alita Battle Angel or Battle Angel Alita. I can't remember which way they're phrasing it. And happy death day to you.
Oh, happy death day to you too.
Does that sound like a plan?
I mean, yeah, that happy death day to you looks fantastic.
Yeah, I know we never have to convince Joe to do a horror movie.
No, not at all. But one, come on, we all dug that first one too.
Oh, absolutely. That first movie was great. And that was one of the ones where my son was trying to like, what horror movies can I watch that aren't, you know, super rated R? And like, we watched that together. He loved it.
How did he like Hereditary?
Oh, that's he's turning 10 this summer. So we'll see how it goes.
Oh, right on time.
So did he like it better or worse than Suspiria?
Yeah. Well, you know, he loves the original Suspiria, so that's kind of a biased opinion.
He's always kind of a snob about that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And the Dario Argento, you know, the colors and the goblin score. I mean, he's pretty into that stuff.
You should introduce him to Fulci. That's your next one. Go do those.
The
Fulci zombie movies. That'll be perfect for him.
I'll put it on the list.
I actually rewatched Happy Death Day to You like 2 weeks ago, and it really holds up.
Yeah,
it's
a really smart movie.
Like, I agree. Like, I just watched it, I really liked it. It definitely has me excited about the new one. And, like, can our video recovery be for the show that I haven't even seen, but that show on Netflix that looks awesome?
Russian Doll?
It's Groundhog's Day, just like Happy Death Day was. Like, she keeps living this day over and over again, and it looks hilarious.
Yeah, I've heard really good things about Russian Doll.
Yes.
Yeah, it's supposed to be good. So make that your video recovery, and hopefully we don't have to issue a retraction. But I don't think we will have to.
Yeah.
Let's hope not.
Yeah, if not, you can always just do Abducted in Plain Sight. That's crazy.
Oh, yeah, oh, God.
So anyway, that's what you have to look forward to. So until next time, County is really a girl.
My killer is after me again. He's not just coming after you.
I'm gonna have to die over and over again to save all of you.
Yeah.
Go, go.
So done with this shit.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.